Radio Prague News.
US President Barack Obama will have to make a fresh nomination for the post of US ambassador in Prague. The Ministry of Justice has unveiled a sweeping reform of rules governing legally certified experts. And Czech goalkeeper Petr Cech saw three goals go past him in Chelsea's 1-3 league loss against rivals Arsenal. US President Barack Obama is faced with making a new nomination to fill the long vacant post of US ambassador in Prague. Time has run out for the current nominee, presidential ethics adviser Norman Eisen, to be cleared by the current Congress, meaning that a new name must be advanced or Eisen nominated again. Congress failed to clear Eisen's candidature after it was advanced at the end of June. The result of the long delay will be that the Czech Republic will go into the new year with 2 years clocked up since the last US ambassador left his post. That was President George Bush's ambassador, Richard Grabner, who left in January 2009. Analysts say the long vacancy is damaging Czech-US relations. Congress convenes again in January. The Ministry of Justice has proposed sweeping changes to a 30-year-old law aimed at improving the selection and performance of legally certified experts. The decisions and recommendations of such experts are often crucial in deciding legal disputes. The Ministry, however, admits that conditions for selecting experts and ensuring their competence are lacking under the existing rules. The planned makeover of those rules was unveiled by the Ministry on Tuesday. They will seek to introduce financial penalties and disqualification and seek to strengthen the conditions for selecting experts. The suggested changes should be passed on to the government by the end of the year and could become law by the autumn of 2011. Heavy overnight snow has complicated transport in parts of the Czech Republic. Between 5 and 15 centimetres of snow fell overnight, with up to 20 centimetres in the mountains. Snow has cut three rail routes around the northern city of Liberec and one in central Bohemia. Most main roads are cleared, but authorities have warned that great care should be taken on secondary routes. Most departures at Prague Airport were normal, but delays were posted for many arrivals. Czech and Chelsea goalkeeper Petr Cech lost 1-3 to London rivals Arsenal in a top-of-the-table Premier League clash on Monday night. The Arsenal win puts them second in the table, with Chelsea in fourth spot with 31 points, 6 points off leaders Manchester United, who have a game in hand. The loss means that Chelsea and Cech have failed to win any of the last six games. Czech captain Tomáš Rosický came on for the last 3 minutes of the game for Arsenal. And finally, a look at the weather. More snow is expected in the coming days, with day temperatures of between -4 and -8 degrees Celsius. Night temperatures may drop to -12 degrees on Wednesday night and Thursday morning, and could even reach -20 in some places. Temperatures should pick up by Friday. I'm Chris Johnston, and that was the news.
Thank you for joining us. This is Radio Prague, the international service of Czech radio. I'm Jan Fellinger. Coming up in today's program, police and customs officers make one of the biggest hauls in recent memory of bootleg liquor. And as 2010 draws to a close, what kind of a year was it for Czech tourists? That's all ahead. Police and customs officers have just made one of their biggest hauls of illegal bootleg liquor in recent times and broken up an organized gang that was apparently functioning for several months. The discovery in the eastern city of Ostrava could well have many Czechs taking a second look at cheap Christmas spirits bought off the back of a lorry or at market stalls. Chris Johnstone reports.
Police and customs officers could barely hide their triumph when on Monday they announced their swoop on a gang of bootleg alcohol producers earlier in the month and one of the biggest hauls of illegal liquor in recent years. The scope of the haul was described by customs spokeswoman Pavla Zdobnitska.
Police found in a lorry 20,000 litres of almost pure spirit and 10,000 litres of already produced alcohol with various brand names in garages. The alcohol was distributed throughout Moravia and Silesia and could be found in different stores and at markets.
The state would have lost out in taxes to the tune of 6 million crowns, around $315,000, if the entire consignment had found its way onto the market. Around 350,000 crowns in cash was found at the site. The swoop at a disused factory came after police and customs officers had been keeping tabs on the gang's operation for some time. They'd earlier witnessed lorries being loaded with large empty containers and coming back a day later filled with spirits. The operation had an international dimension, with the raw materials for the various brews, including a specialised disinfectant containing chlorine, being shipped across the border from Slovakia. Health officials say the end product would have damaged the health of drinkers. Chlorine, even in small doses, can seriously affect the alimentary canal. Added to that, alcohol production in the abandoned factory did not even respect the most basic hygiene rules. Seven people were detained on the spot during the raid, with three held in custody. They will be charged with conspiring to defraud the state of tax revenues and could face jail sentences of up to 10 years. The Ostrava haul is sizeable. The total litres seized represents a tenth of the entire haul of illegal liquor recovered in the country during 2009. Customs officials say they are winning the battle against bootleg alcohol, thanks in part to greater efforts to stamp out cross-border production in Poland and Slovakia. But above-board distillers and liquor producers are still calling for the state to step up its fight against bootleg alcohol. They estimate that up to one bottle in four sold in the Czech Republic contains illegal alcohol, with the state losing billions of crowns in tax revenues as a result. Rum and vodka are among the favourite targets for the bootleg sales.
That was Chris Johnstone reporting there on the biggest haul in recent times of illegal bootleg alcohol by police and customs officers. Now we turn to this story. On Monday, the Association for Czech Tour Operators and Travel Agencies posted figures for 2010 on the number of tours sold to Czech tourists, from vacations in nearby countries to more exotic locations. After many pinched pennies, or rather crowns, in 2009, what changed this year? A little earlier, I spoke to one of the association's vice presidents, Tomio Okamura.
We have about 7% increasing regarding sale of tours to the Czech citizens. So it means the travel agents and operators sold 2.25 million tours this year. So it is quite good result.
How do you explain the turnaround? Because we're still at a point when we're facing austerity measures, for example, by the new government.
We can say that this economic crisis is slowly over, but still Czech people save their money very carefully. It means that this increasing is mostly done by tours to the destination, where it's possible go by car or by coach. Exactly, it is Croatia, Slovakia, Italy. This is destination which where spent Czech people almost half of their foreign vacation this year. Regarding more expensive tours by airplane, there we have still decreasing about 15% compared to last year. So it is clear that Czech people again start to travel abroad, but still they are very careful about their money, so they prefer near destination where is cheaper holiday than by flight.
I'm curious, for those Czechs who do have more spending power and are able to go on, say, more exotic vacations, what locations were popular for them?
Regarding exotic destinations, there is a situation a little different, because people who are able to travel to exotic destination, they are higher society. So this influence of crisis to this part of Czech citizens is not so high. Regarding traveling to exotic destination, also last year, and the same situation is this year, this situation is stable, there is not any big decreasing or increasing. And if we will talk about some one destination, most popular destination, it means Thailand, there was, for example, last year, 26% increasing of Czech citizens. So it means that this type of destination for higher society, which is well known for good service and good safety, this type of destination hasn't so big problems.
We've been talking about Czech travelers going abroad, going to nearby destinations, going to more further areas. What about people coming in? We are now still in the holiday season. Of course, New Year's Eve is coming up. What kind of possibilities are there for tourists who will be, say, coming to Prague for December the 31st?
Coming New Year's Eve will visit Czech Republic 190,000 foreign tourists, and 80% from them will come just to Prague. This term is most busy term within whole year from the view of the tourism in Czech Republic. According to our research, there will be about 5% increasing of the number of the tourists this year coming to New Year Eve to Czech Republic.
I wanted to ask about this. The French travel website Trivago has reported in a survey that Prague's hotels are increasing prices for New Year's by threefold, by some 179%, and that is ranked as among the highest in Europe. Normally, average prices are, they say, are around 77 euros. There'll be 215 euros for New Year's Eve. How does that strategy strike you by Prague Hotels?
I think that this strategy will be not successful. Higher categories, accommodation, try to offer more expensive rates. But problem is that we have too many beds, too many accommodation facilities in Czech Republic. So, and in the Prague. So at the moment it is clear that on 31 December there will be not fully booked all accommodation facilities in Prague. So I think that at the moment it is just psychologist fight between clients who are waiting for some cheaper rates and between hotels which are still waiting if somebody will buy this expensive accommodation.
That was Tomio Okamura, a vice president at the Czech Tour Operators and Travels Agencies Association, talking there about the situation for Czech tourists in 2010, but also about what the conditions will be like for tourists coming into the Czech Republic and especially Prague on New Year's Eve. And if you're going to be spending time in the Czech capital, why not drop us a line and tell us about your experience? You can write to english@radio.cz or send us an old-fashioned letter to Radio Prague, Vinohradská 12, 12099 Prague 2, the Czech Republic. And now it's time for today's main feature. Steve Lichtag is a respected Czech-American filmmaker who has traveled the world mapping everything from activity on coral reefs to blue whales. But most famously, the director captured what it's like to swim with the ocean's most feared predator, the great white shark, a creature any sane person would try their hardest to avoid. Not Lichtag. If there's anything he enjoys, he made clear in a recent Radio Prague interview taped safely on dry land, it's adventure. And when it comes to that, what better place to find it than in the deep blue sea? Director Steve Lichtag.
The main reason why I basically started, why I maybe am still today specialized in underwater films, is that I started scuba diving when I was living in Florida. And it was fantastic, and I completely fell in love with diving. Underwater world was just is so mysterious and so beautiful and so exciting. And that was somehow very simple to decide. I said, well, if I start directing my films, I will start with underwater films. And that's how it happened.
Filming underwater is, of course, a far different experience from filming on land, with its own pitfalls and specific techniques. All told, there are countless factors to consider.
Making films, regular documentary films, of course, or feature films, and underwater films is completely different ballgame, it's completely different technique, and it's not the technique only, it's not that you need to have cameras in underwater boxes, you need to have underwater lights, you have to be good scuba diver, because you basically should not somehow occupy your mind with the technical things of diving, watching how much air you have and how deep you are, and I don't know how fast you descend, and it's that you basically are dealing with the main producer, which is the weather and the animals, which on one hand is making it more difficult, on the other hand is very exciting.
Capturing a particular fish on camera can be a long, drawn-out process, and consequently many areas are often revisited. It isn't easy, whether filming minnows or barracudas. But arguably none of Lichtag's projects has been more ambitious to date than Carcharias, the Great White, in which Lichtag and shark specialist Andre Hartmann set their sights on the most respected and feared shark on the planet. It was Hartmann's, as well as the film crew's, goal to film the fish in open water, without the safety of cages. The project, years in the making, was completed in 2001. Says Steve Lichtag, a large part of its success was thanks to Hartmann's focus.
Andre Hartmann was very important, key element in the film production, Carcharias, Great White, because he was basically the only one who at that time knew what he's doing. But the question is, if there's anyone who knows what what he's doing, swimming with great white shark. Andre Hartmann is a South African, I call him animal, person who lives on the bank of the Indian Ocean, which is simply white shark is something like, for us, is dog. So for him it was no big deal, and he gave us basically the spirit, and he gave us really the power to overcome ourselves.
Overcoming themselves meant first luring an individual great white, and then and only then getting cameras into the water, one of those manned by Lichtag himself. Andre Hartmann was the one to swim closest to the specimen, armed with a spear gun. How do you get a great white to take an interest in your boat? A series of different baits are used. The first is shark liver, the director explains.
The oil from the shark liver floats on the top and just goes with the current and just sends the signal to any potential predator which is around, to let him know that there is something cooking, so that he would eventually follow the track.
Then a rubber seal is used to further attract the creature, and finally chum, raw fish, is thrown into the water on a line to keep it interested. But the key is to not let the shark eat.
When you repeat it for, let's say, 10-20 times, the shark basically stays around the boat, and that's the time when you can get your cameras and jump in a wetsuit and say tui tui, God help us, and jump in the water.
The results are sobering even on one's TV screen. What it must have been like in person is difficult to imagine. But there were steps the crew relied on routinely when filming The Great White. Basically, Never let the fish focus too long as it continually circles and continues to close in. Two, when things do get tense, take assertive action with the camera to keep it away.
When I see 5-meter great white coming and charge me, when it comes to the moment when he's 1 meter from me and really opening his mouth, that's time to not run away, but that's the time to actually speed up and go closer to him and punch him in his nose.
Easier said than done, but nevertheless effective, although eventually the cameras conk out one by one. In the film, all the crew get away without serious incident, but who's to say it wasn't nerve-wracking. At one point in the film, Andre Hartman even swims up to the great white and allows himself to be towed, holding on to the shark's fin, leading even the film's narrator to question the swimmer's sanity.
In South Africa, it's not permitted. It's absolutely forbidden. I would say it is better to go in the cage. You meet white shark somewhere while swimming. It's probably not the best time, and it's most of the time it's the time when the shark will surprise you.
But in the case of the film crew, Lichtag says all were aware to bring back never-before-seen footage. They had to take risks.
If it would be only one camera, I don't know. I would not feel very safe. Because I think no one is actually safe with the great white around. All the time we were outside the cage because we had to basically follow the great white, and I'm sure we could not do it just from the cage. It could not be done.
The great white is only part of Steve Lichtag's story. He has also filmed The Plight of the Blue Whales, a far different experience, as well as a series about all kinds of sea life. But one of the projects closest to his heart was something else entirely, filming life in streams and rivers in Moravia and neighboring Slovakia. He went from sharks to the Leviathan to filming the story of a tiny freshwater fish.
It is a story about these little animals which we humans don't see. So it was all shot in macro, and I personally love the story. It's a bullhead, a 7 centimeters little fish, which actually used to live in the oceans. But when the oceans were here and the oceans backed off and we became dry land, this particular fish stayed here. It's a fish which has no cold bladder, cannot swim basically, can only jump. So it looks like prehistoric creature. It's incredible. And it's a story of trout, his little eggs, and it's a story of little bitty shrimps. Shrimps which have about 2 millimeters. It's such a funny story.
But not without a serious message, says Lichtag, who points to long outdated legislation which controversially still allows fishermen to use electric current. The aim was to show the impact and cause a stir, which it did.
The point of the film, I wanted to show our government and our lawmakers that there is legally very strange kind of fishing going on, which is fishing by using electric power. And I wanted to show what is happening in this invisible world, how these living creatures are suffering when they get the electric shock. And after release of this film, there was a lot of noise, but it still is on. The use of electricity actually in the streams is still legal. Absurdly, it's legal in this country.
And today's main feature about Steve Lichtag was first broadcast in 2008. Now, we have an important announcement for you. Radio Prague, the international service of Czech radio, will cease broadcasting on shortwave. That's after January the 31st, 2011. The reason for the changes is a significant cut in our budget. The Czech Foreign Ministry, which finances Radio Prague, has reduced the budget significantly for next year, and that's in line with the government's austerity measures aimed at lowering the budget deficit. So for those listeners who have been listening on shortwave, who have been following Radio Prague, that important change. When it comes to broadcasting in FM, however, that FM broadcast in the capital continues in four languages. That's in English, French, German, and Russian. Any changes to our program, along with new developments, will be announced in January. And now we're just about out of time for this day. Thank you for joining us, and take care.